I will be reading Exodus 20, 1 and 2, and also 8 through 11. And God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt and out of the land of slavery. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreign residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you here this morning. Last year, after my father-in-law died, some of the grandkids got some gifts passed on to them. And the two grandsons got my father-in-law's comic collection. So there was, I think one was called Superboy, and then the other one was Batman. And Jude inherited about 50 issues from the 1940s to the early 50s of the Batman comics, and that my father-in-law had collected and kind of meticulously preserved all these years. And I've never been into comics. I knew Jude got them. I saw them. They looked kind of old and of minimal value to me. But for Jude, they were a gift, and he was really excited about these comic books. And he really appreciated it and read them, would stay up at night and read them in his bed. So last winter, I'm with a friend from Illinois, and he's really into comic books, and I just kind of offhandedly said what Jude had inherited. And he said, when you get back home, text me which issues he got. So I kind of forgot about it, went home, he texts me again, says, hey, tell me about those comic books. And so I finally take a couple pictures of a few, and I send them. And he says, give me the list of the numbers. So they're all numbered. So I was like, okay. And so I sent him this list. And at that point, he stops texting me, and he calls me. And he says, do you understand what these comic books are worth? And he started talking to me, and he said, oh, this is issue 101. This is when so-and-so character was introduced. This is a super important one. Again, I'm not understanding all this. This one's worth like $500. And this was a little bit for me like stumbling on that Mickey Mantle rookie card that you thought your mom threw away, or that everyone has a story about their mom throwing away. But I actually found the Mickey Mantle rookie card. And all of a sudden, these comic books, which looked dusty and worthless to me, all of a sudden were a payment on college education. And all I could think was, Jude, for your own good, I have to protect this gift, because you don't realize how valuable it is. And at first, I thought about various restrictions I could do. One of them was you could only read them like when I'm around and I get to watch and everything. And I started thinking about these, how I could keep these in this pristine condition. And eventually, I decided the only course of action was to take them away, and to put them in the basement and protect them. And this whole time, Jude is really confused about this. Because one, he's losing his comic books, and two, I don't think this promise of college education money really meant a lot to him. So he goes to his mom and says, Dad has taken away my Batman comics. And my defense was, it's for his own good. Because you don't understand, you think I'm being mean, but all these restrictions are for his own good. They're meant to protect this gift that he's been given. And besides, I thought, I can buy a bunch of, my friend told me, you can just buy reprints of all these comic books. And I was like, he'll have the exact same comic book, and it'll be fine. You know, it just won't be the original. So Krishana wasn't happy about this because my mother-in-law knew that these were probably valuable comics. She could have had them appraised. She could have sold them and then given the money, you know, to Jude for college. But she didn't. She gave them as a gift to be enjoyed now. And just so you know, Jude has the comic books. They're probably getting creases and all things, but I'm out of the picture here, so he has his comic books back, just so you know. So why am I telling you this story? Well, today we're beginning a sermon series on Sabbath, and actually just one thing I want to mention is we're actually doing this in conjunction with our brothers and sisters at First Mennonite in Canton, Ohio. So there's a pastor there, and he and I came up with the idea of doing a series on Sabbath. So they'll be doing this series the same time we are, and in a few weeks, Sean will actually be here preaching, and I'll be preaching in Canton. And I don't know exactly what comes to your mind when you think about Sabbath, but let me just take some guesses here. So for some of you, Sabbath may be as relevant as a 1950s Batman comic book collection. You think this is a kind of a gift or a command that was given a couple thousand years ago, and you kind of blow off the dust on these old comic books, and you think, huh, this is interesting. This might have been valuable for some people at some period in our history, but this doesn't have a lot of value to me today. It's pretty archaic. And so you put that gift back up on the shelf. And for some of you, the word Sabbath kind of conjures up a different era. You know, maybe you were a kid, and maybe this is when businesses actually really shut down. You know, like all the businesses shut down because they had laws, blue laws, where you really had to shut down. And some of you might have had a routine that sounded a little bit like Mary and Laura in Little House on the Prairie, if you've read those. And the way they described Sabbath was, it was this day that crawled. There was no running, there was no shouting, there was no fun on the Sabbath. And some of you, and I've picked this up a little bit, Sabbath might have been a day that was great for Dad, because Dad got to go home and eat this really great meal and then go outside and chat while his wife was doing all these dishes and finishing the... So I figured, like, Sabbath was a great thing for the man and not so good for the woman who was wrestling with kids all afternoon. So Sabbath might have seemed less like a gift and something more to be endured, to get through. Or for some of you, the first thing that pops in your mind is legalism. And you want to say, don't you remember what Jesus said about the Sabbath? Don't you remember these stories about Jesus picking grain and healing people and then the Pharisees plot to kill him? Don't you remember how in their zeal to protect the Sabbath, they wrapped it in so many restrictions that it was more of a burden than a gift? So if any of you have these objections, I want to invite you to just hang out with me for a while. Because part of my reason of interest in doing a sermon series on Sabbath is because I'm one of the worst Sabbath keepers I know. Like, if you have an objection to keeping Sabbath, like, I've probably had that one. And if you've been bad at stopping at rest, I might be worse, which my wife could attest to. And I don't say that to give myself some kind of backhanded compliment. Because you know who in the Bible is portrayed as busy and never taking a break from work? It's not Jesus. I was reading an article when these people were speculating, if you had one word to describe Jesus, what would it be? So think about that. One word. Loving, kind, compassionate, powerful. I don't know what word you choose. But Dallas Willard, who was really one of the most influential thinkers on spiritual formation during the 90s and the 2000s, his word he offered is relaxed. When he thought of Jesus, the one word he thought was relaxed, unhurried. And do you know who is not relaxed and unhurried in the Bible? It is Satan. Satan is very busy. In the book of Job, God asks Satan, Satan, where have you been? And Satan answers, I've been going back and forth between here and earth and walking up and down it. In other words, I've been really busy. And A.J. Swoboda, who's a pastor up in the Northwest, wrote a book on Sabbath, said he sometimes hears people say, you know, the devil never takes a break, and I'm not going to take a break either. And his response is, when did we start taking our discipleship model from the devil? Which I think is a great response. When did we start looking at the devil as the one that we should imitate? You see, when you frame rest in this way, rest is not seen as an element of discipleship, it's seen as a weakness. And you see, I think for many of us, including myself, I think Sabbath is this gift that we don't know what to do with. It's like these comic books that Jude received. You get it, and I'm just not sure what to do with it. I think because so many of us have neglected Sabbath so bad, I think we've paid a price, not just physically, but spiritually and relationally. After I farmed for 8 years, I knew a lot about physical exhaustion, and I experienced a lot of physical exhaustion, and I said did a horrible job of keeping Sabbath. But when I kind of got out and maybe entered more mainstream society, I saw a lot of people exhausted. Some of them physically, to some extent, but mostly exhausted psychologically, mentally, emotionally, from a 24/7 nonstop world where commerce never has to stop anymore. I mean, you can get on Amazon right now while I'm preaching and have something there tomorrow. The news cycle never stops. You never get a break from the news cycle. Social media never stops. And I think all this nonstop has left many people exhausted. So we as a modern society have all the benefits, all these devices that are supposed to make our life easier. They're supposed to save time. And yet the thing that so often happens and comes up in conversation is, I don't have time. I'd love to do that, but I don't have time. And I've also noticed, and I picked this up in Illinois, is that, you know, for, like I said, most of our society kind of set Sunday aside as a sacred day, and people didn't schedule much. But in Illinois, by the time I left, people were scheduling soccer practices on Sunday, like at 11 o'clock. So society has moved in on this day, and all kinds of things are scheduled now on Sunday. So, you know, work, if you think about your work, if you work an office job, work follows you back. You know, you can always check your email. Workers never get a break. And I wonder if a lot of this emotional and psychological and physical exhaustion is our inability to stop. To take a day not to do, but to just be. And I wonder if at least in some part, this is because our neglect of the Sabbath command. You see, we have these Ten Commandments that are posted lots of places, and I think we take them pretty seriously. I mean, there's lots of conversation you could have about what on the Mosaic Law still applies to us, but most of us take the Ten Commandments pretty seriously. And we kind of have this list of Ten Commandments and one kind of suggestion. So that suggestion is keeping the Sabbath. And my question to you is, which of the other Ten Commandments should we get rid of? Do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not murder. I think we'd be pretty reluctant to get rid of any of these other commandments, and yet the Sabbath we kind of treat pretty differently. I heard the same pastor that I was telling you about in the Northwest, he was sitting at a meeting in his church, and he realized if he broke any of these commandments, he would be fired, except the Sabbath, and he'd get a raise. And just to be clear, that has not been my experience at all at Midway. But I say that because I think a lot of churches have bought into this too, that we've bought into the 24/7 nature of society, and it can be exhausting. In Matthew 11:28, Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." And immediately after that, he tells two stories about Sabbath, about walking through the grain field with his disciples and plucking some heads of grain and eating them. And then he tells a story about healing a shriveled hand on the Sabbath. And both of these things infuriate the Pharisees so much that they want to kill him. And he says to the Pharisee, "The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath." In Mark's gospel, we hear this line, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for Sabbath." So instead of seeing Sabbath as this gift to the weary and the heavy laden, a day of feasting and of healing, the Pharisees turned Sabbath into a heavy burden, a gift from God that they didn't know how to receive. And so what I'd like to do during this series is kind of pull out like this comic book, this gift that we've received that we're not always sure what to do with, and kind of blow off the dust and see what value this gift might have for us. You know, value for ourselves, but also for our families and our church. Value for creation and our entire world. So let's start. What is Sabbath? You know, the Hebrew word is Shabbat, which many of you probably know, and it literally means to cease, to end, to rest. And as many of you probably know, Jewish Sabbath begins at sunset on Friday, and it goes 25 hours, so it finishes up Saturday evening. And Christians have been keeping some form of Sabbath for over 2,000 years. So this is not a new thing. This has been kept in some form for 2,000 years. And we typically, our Sabbath has been the Lord's Day, which has been Sunday. And, you know, and most of us, it's not exactly like the Jewish Sabbath. Most of us probably consider from sunrise on Sunday or maybe Saturday evening until Monday morning our Sabbath. And we typically call it the Lord's Day. So Larry, could you put the first slide up? So the first day of rest in Scripture comes really early, and it's in the creation story. By the seventh day, God had finished all the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So if you've been anything like me, if you read the story, what do you think about as the climax of the creation story? I mean, usually in my experience, it's been the sixth day, of course. This is when man and woman were created. And then it's just like the seventh day is kind of like the anti, it's like that part in plot where it starts dropping and you kind of tie up the loose ends. It's after the climax, the seventh day. And sometimes it brings up the question, well, you know, why did God have to rest? If God is all powerful, you know, why did God have to rest? But what number of scholars have argued is actually, if you really look at the Hebrew and you look at the way the Hebrew is structured, the climax, the culmination of the creation story is not the sixth day, but actually the seventh day. And there's a couple different ways that the Hebrew text does to point to the climax being the seventh day. If you look at the seventh day is said three times, the other days don't do that. On the seventh day, God finished. On the seventh day, God rested. God blessed and hallowed the seventh day. And the NIV says deemed holy, but I want to point that word out to you, hallow, made holy. This is the first thing in Scripture that's deemed holy, is that seventh day. So think about this. This is the first thing in Scripture that's made sacred. So why would the seventh day be the climax of the story? Because the seventh day is the day when all of creation comes together, and for one day it lives at peace and harmony with each other. So if you want a picture of shalom, the seventh day of creation is the picture of that. This is a world of peace and well-being. This is not a world wrecked by violence and war. And so the creation story tells us there's something really, really special about the day of rest. But it also has something to tell us about who we are as humans. We read the first male and female are made on the sixth day. And guess what they do on the seventh day? They rest. Which means the first, in this story, the first full day of existence is a day spent not of work, but of rest. And you know what Adam and Eve had accomplished by this point? Nothing. They had accomplished nothing. After God created them, he looked down at them and he said, "You are very good. You're not just good, you are very good." And then the next day, they rest with God and they celebrate God's goodness and God's creation. I think that's really important to notice. Sabbath is not a day to celebrate what we've done. It's a day to celebrate what God has done. It's a day to celebrate God's goodness and God's creation. I think this is an area of discipleship for us. I think sometimes we get so busy trying to do things for God that we fail to just stop and enjoy God, to enjoy God's goodness and God's creation. And I think at other times we fall into a trap of thinking that we have to earn that rest. That's a trap I fell into for a long time. And this story reminds us that we don't work in order to rest. Actually, we rest, and then we work out of that rest. And it also reminds us of our identity as very good, not something we earn, but something that is given to us by God. It's a gift that we receive in gratitude. This gives us a picture of a God who is a generous God, who invites us into rest. And what's interesting about this picture of God is how different it was than the pictures of other gods at this time. So the Jews were not the only religious people at this time. There were people like the Phoenicians and the Egyptians, and they all had their own creation stories. And if you compare these stories, a couple of things rise to the surface. One, this is the first creation story where people are named good, where matter and creation is named good. Second, this is the first one where both men and women are created in God's image. And third, in all the other creation stories, humans are created to accomplish the goals of the gods. So in no other creation story does the God invite people into rest, invite them to take a break, invite them into a weekend, so to speak. So I want to look at these two Sabbath commands, because the first time we actually see the word Sabbath is in Exodus in chapter 16, and then it'll be named in chapter 20 as a commandment for the Israelites. So the first command, Exodus 20, Just to give you a little background, the Israelites are crossing through the wilderness. They're at Mount Sinai, and Moses is given these Ten Commandments, or the law in the wilderness. The second place is in Deuteronomy, and I mentioned this last week. This is actually at the right before they cross the Jordan River into the Promised Land, and then Moses gives them the commandments again. So there's two places, in Exodus and Deuteronomy. And these commands are almost identical, and they're so close that what's actually noticeable is the differences. So Larry, could you put that next slide up? So I'll just kind of shorten these two commands, but here's the Exodus. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Deuteronomy says, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. So you notice the difference there is remember and observe. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on that today, but probably talk about that later. What I want you to focus on is the second part, is the reason for taking a Sabbath, for keeping Sabbath. And Exodus says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Deuteronomy says, remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. So the commandment in Exodus, the reason why you Sabbath is grounded in the creation story. The reason why you're asked to Sabbath is look back at the creation story and see what God did. God worked on 6 days, and then God rested on the seventh day. And the Israelites are commanded to imitate God. So in other words, we rest because God rested. And very early in the biblical story, this rhythm is set up of work and rest. This becomes the pattern for human work and rest. And that's one way we kind of image God. We imitate God. We do as God did. We rest on the seventh day. But it also tells us a couple things. It tells us that work is good. That God invites us to partake in work. That when we work, we become co-creators of God. I think that's really something I want to point out in talking about Sabbath, is this is not to say that work is bad. Actually, it's quite the opposite. If you notice, actually, work is not a punishment for the fall. It's not a punishment for sin. Work precedes the fall. So, you know, what were Adam and Eve doing before the fall? They were working in the garden. They were nurturing. They were caring for the garden. Adam was given the task of naming the animals. I think God intended us to work. I think most of you would agree that there's something deeply satisfying about work, about creating order out of disorder. And we all do that in different ways. Some of us actually take physical matter and we create order of us. Some of us actually take a block of metal and we shape it into a tool. Or we take a block of wood and we shape it into a house or a piece of furniture. Some of us actually still till the ground and create order out of the chaos of the soil. Some of us do that in more abstract ways. Some of us, for our jobs, we take words that are all scattered and we create order out of them. We write stories and we write poetry. We write things on the internet. Some of us take the disorder of human sickness as nurses and doctors and we create order out of this. And so in our work, we become like God. We create order out of disorder. So the Garden of Eden was not a place of idleness. It's not a place that Adam and Eve were just sitting around doing nothing. They were working and they were worshiping. And there was a rhythm to that work and worship. And the thing is if you tinker with that rhythm too much, what people have found is that things go awry. In 1793, during the French Revolution, one of the things they wanted to do was de-Christianize the calendar. They thought, you know, this calendar is attached to the Christian faith. We're going to de-Christianize it. So for about 12 years, the French government experimented with this new calendar. And what they did was instead of having 4 7-day weeks, they had 3 10-day weeks. So they would work 9 days, and then the 10th day would be the day of rest. Well, they tried this for about 12 years, and then they abandoned it. They abandoned it because it was a complete failure. The suicide rates went up, people burned out, and the whole point was to create a more productive people, and yet production actually decreased. There's something about this rhythm of 6 days of work and 1 day of rest. There's something about it that seemed to be worked into our DNA, that in order to flourish, we as humans have to rest. And God has set up a rhythm to do that. If we neglect it, we pay a price. Maybe not right away, but eventually it catches up to you. So let me be clear. Sabbath rest assumes work. Sabbath rest minus work equals laziness. But you know what Sabbath calls work without, I'm sorry, you know what the Bible calls work without Sabbath rest? Slavery. And you know who knew this better than anybody else was the Israelites. Because they went 400 years without a day off. 400 years. Can you imagine that, going 400 years without a weekend, without a vacation, without a single day off? And the result of those 400 years was that the Israelites were no longer considered people. They were slaves. They were no longer people created in the image of God. They were created to be like machines and equipment for making bricks and building pyramids for Pharaoh. The work had dehumanized them. So if the command in Exodus is grounded in imitating God, the command in Deuteronomy is grounded in something different. It's grounded in remembering that God delivered them from slavery, that God had made them free, that God made rest possible. So if the command in Exodus takes the people back to Eden to remember the garden, the command in Deuteronomy is designed to take them back to Egypt to remember what it was like to be slaves. And remember, slaves don't rest. Slaves can't rest. They don't have the freedom to rest. They have to work all the time. And they can't rest because they have a taskmaster. And the taskmaster is always standing there and telling them that they have to meet a quota, that they have to make more and more bricks, that they have to work harder and harder. And in the Sabbath command in Deuteronomy, God says to the Israelites, remember how you were slaves, remember how you had these taskmasters, and remember how with a mighty hand and outstretched arm, I freed you from those brutal taskmasters. In his book, The Rest of God, Mark Buchanan says that most of those taskmasters in the Exodus story were drowned. Water came over them. But he says a few of them actually survived. He says a few of them we actually helped survive. We actually threw them ropes. And we pulled them up on shore, and we resuscitated them. And while thankfully we don't have a taskmaster like the Israelites did in Egypt, my guess is that most of you might have one, two, maybe a couple taskmasters perched on your shoulder, speaking into your ear. And they don't tell us to make bricks. They don't tell us to make pyramids. But what they do tell us is that we have quotas. And unless those quotas are met, you cannot rest. I don't know exactly what your taskmaster sounds like. I only know what my own taskmaster sounded like, and I know it very well from my days of farming. My taskmaster, just to give you an example, sounded a little bit like this. Rest? Are you kidding me? You think you can take a break? You think you've done enough to stop? You don't deserve a break. Did you see that other farmer down the road? He's not taking a break. If you take a break, how much farther behind him are you going to be? And by the way, have you looked around your farm recently? Have you seen the strawberry field? Have you seen the weeds? Those weeds don't go away on their own. You see the muskmelon out in the field starting to crack? If you don't harvest those on Sunday, by Monday they're going to be totally split open. And you saw the forecast for tomorrow, right? It's going to rain. If you don't plant, you're never going to get that in. And if that's not enough to make you stop, think about if you really stop, what's going to happen to the farm. The whole thing's going under. And then who will you be? Some of you might have a taskmaster that sounds a little bit like that. Most of yours is going to sound a little bit different. But my guess is that all of us have a taskmaster perched on our shoulder telling us that we cannot afford to stop and rest. Your taskmaster might be reminding you of all the unanswered emails that are sitting in your box or all the papers that are waiting to be graded. The taskmaster might be reminding you that you cannot take a break from Twitter or Facebook or social media, because if you do, you're going to be that much farther behind, and you're going to be that much farther out of the loop. The taskmaster might be reminding you, are you kidding me? You think you can take a break when your house is this disorganized, when there's this much laundry to do? The taskmaster keeps telling us there's no time for rest, and that the only way we can possibly get ahead is to just keep working harder and harder, and one day, on the horizon is going to be that rest. And at least from my experience, that day never comes. You keep trying to make up. If I can just work a couple hours on this Sunday and I can get ahead, the rest is going to come. You know, maybe your taskmaster is really starting to ask some hard-hitting questions like, if you're not working, who are you? What are you worth? Or you just want to hang out with God for the day? Do you even think God wants to hang out with you? Do you think if God knew what you had done, he would really want to hang out with you? And even if he did, God did want to hang out with you, wouldn't he prefer that you actually be doing something for him, working for his kingdom? You think the devil takes a break? And so the taskmaster drives you out of the rest of God. Maybe not physical rest. You can be sitting there doing nothing and be extremely restless because you're not rested emotionally and psychologically. And Sabbath is a day for drowning taskmasters. Sabbath is a day to remember that while our work is good, it's not what defines us. Sabbath is a day to remember that I am not God. God is God. God is the one in charge of the garden. God is the one in charge of the world. And you know what? If I take a break, things are not going to fall apart because I'm not God. And it reminds me who is God. And I can release, at least for one day, try all my worries and my cares to him. Sabbath is a day to return to Eden and look around and revel in God's creation, to just enjoy God's goodness and God's creation. Sabbath is a day to stop manipulating that creation, stop trying to create order out of disorder, and just enjoy it. Sabbath is a day to just think about God, not just to think about God, but to enjoy God. Sabbath is a day for drowning taskmasters. I'm not going to say that the taskmaster is not going to be back on Monday or Tuesday. I'm not saying that you're not going to eventually throw another rope to that taskmaster and pull him on shore and put him back on your shoulder. But at least for one day, we can rest knowing we are good enough. Sabbath is that day we hit the reset button and remind us that our deepest identity is not found in what we do, but who we are. And who we are children of God, born of the grace and mercy of Jesus Christ. Sabbath is the day we return, even if it's just for a glimpse, to Eden, to get a glimpse of the world in perfect harmony.